You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Today on Off Talkle Empire, the conference's biggest names are off raking leaves this week. And Maryland and Illinois are also off sulking in the corner. Tune in to watch as the hosts stretch five games into an entire hour this week on Off Talkle Empire. How am I going to do that without talking about Illinois? There's only one way to find out.
Your source for Big Ten talk, it's Off Talkle Empire!
Welcome back to Off Talkle Empire, the podcast that I cannot introduce without a bunch of long and awkward pauses as I try to think of something to say about how we're a college football podcast that focuses on the Big Ten because that's what the mission of our flagship blog is.
Nailed it. So,
call me Jalen Naylor.
Because
I nailed it.
Before we get to the week that will be in the Big Ten, we must look back at what happened in the rest of the country, last week, because we spent way too much time talking about our own games, which, hey, again, that's what we're here to talk about. Unfortunately, last week, however, there were a lot of really, really good games, and it would have been fun to get them into the recap podcast, but that's never going to happen, just never, so.
It would have been fun for me personally if I had watched either all the college football last weekend or none of it. Instead, I middled it and spent part of my homecoming weekend watching Illinois, so I was exposed to some college football. And then I'm seeing on Monday, everybody's like, was this the greatest college football Saturday of all time? I'm like, I don't know. All I know is my team didn't score any points. So yeah, sure, whatever. It could have been. Could have been just any other college football Saturday. Yeah,
you've never seen a 1.5-point line that you're not going to consider middling. So we'll get right through it because we got a number of them. Ole Miss Arkansas out of the noon slot was fantastic. Went to, was it? Double overtime or just single overtime, but either way,
it was regulation.
Double overtime.
It was regulation. It hit over 100 points in regulation, despite being a 1-point margin of victory.
Yeah,
that's a beautiful game.
Yeah, and so Arkansas ties the game as time expires with a touchdown, and then Sam Pittman opts to go for two to win the game. They're on the road. They're a pretty good contingent of Arkansas fans there, but they go. They make the call to try to win the game. I will almost always agree with that. I tune out national media for this exact reason because I'm sure there are lots of people in this situation who are like, I just don't understand why you wouldn't extend the game there. You don't extend the game because your defense can't stop Ole Miss, like even a little bit. The, Arkansas tied the game late and then gave it back to Ole Miss with like a minute 20 left. I was like, boy, that's a lot of time. Ole Miss can get in field goal. Oh, wait, they're scoring touchdown right now. So,
yeah. Well, not to mention, it's not just that you can't stop them. It's also that, look how many points you've scored, right?
Yeah.
You should, you've got reason to believe in your offense.
Plenty of confidence to believe you can get 2 yards.
The example for me, of course, is Aaron Rodgers driving 95 yards in 20 seconds with Jeff Janis in a playoff game. And then Mike McCarthy being like, let's play for overtime. Aaron Rodgers just made 95 yards in 20 seconds with Jeff Janis as his number one receiver. But I don't think we can score this 2-pointer and win it. Now, the Packers are, of course, relevant because we're always looking for ways to satisfy Iowa fans. And if you want just a pleasant distraction from, you know, just a little breather from Iowa fans, I'd recommend that you go back and watch the last 3 minutes of Packers-Bengals and the whole overtime and pretend like that was an entire football game because that was the most beautiful shit you've ever seen. 5 missed field goals and then 1 to win it.
Yeah. So, that being said, it was a fantastic game and probably not even the actual best game in the time slot because the Red River Shootout was likewise bonkers. Oklahoma was down 28-7 in the second quarter. They benched Spencer Rattler, the preseason Heisman favorite, presumed top 10 NFL pick, They go with a true freshman quarterback. He brings them all the way back, back and forth at the end. Oklahoma ends up winning the game. And I believe a fumbled kickoff basically set them up to win that. And here's, I'm going to make an analogy here, and this is a chance for everyone out there in listening to get to know me a little better. So when I was a lad, I was one of those kids.
When you were a young boy. Okay, go on.
My father never took me into the city, though, but... when I was a young lad, I was one of those young boys who is very into... You know how all young boys are very into a thing? And the thing that I was very into was dinosaurs.
Ah.
And when I was 5 years old, a movie called Jurassic Park came
out. Ah.
And so, for a little while there, I am quite sure my parents hated that dinosaurs had ever existed. But anyway... There was a sequel to Jurassic Park, The Lost World, that came out a few years later. Also a really good movie, in my opinion. But anyway, my point here is the expression that Steve Sarkisian had on his face in this game, similar to earlier this season when they took another loss and he was realizing, oh man, the fans are going to hate this. I have to deal with the boosters now. The look on that guy's face reminds me of the scene from The Lost World when Ian Malcolm... shit talks the guy who brought a T-Rex to San Diego and then let it escape by just leaning over behind him and whispering, "Now you're John Hammond." Because now Steve Sarkisian is Texas football coach. I know that was a long way to go, and given our usual listener numbers, I would guess maybe 3 people know what I'm talking about.
Now I'm wearing Oklahoma shorts just because that's what I happen to pick out.
Uh-huh.
But I do have some insight into Oklahoma as a result of all this stuff, and that is that the reason they didn't do this last year was because they did not have a Caleb Williams with the kind of game-changing running ability that they could pull Spencer Rattler for, because Spencer Rattler is not that kind of athlete. Caleb Williams gave them a completely different style of offense, not to mention that made Kennedy Brooks a bigger running threat.
Yeah.
That they kind of said, fuck it, we're running the option. Hey man, I can see my Bob Stoops visor from here. I lost it my senior year in college for several months after they lost at home to Texas Tech after a lightning delay. I chucked it into a corner and then it got lost for months. But anyway, what was I saying? Oh yeah, so this could be the point where Lincoln Riley realizes that he doesn't have to just be the passing offensive genius guy, because Oklahoma's had some good offenses in the late Bob Stoops era as well that were good at running the ball. You remember Samaje Perine, mm-hmm. that they would give a bunch of carries.
Joe Mixon,
yeah. Kennedy Brooks could be that kind of back. And I think with Caleb Williams gives them more of a, you know, much more of a dynamic and physical type of offense that may be able to bulldoze through the rest of the Big 12 and then put up the most entertaining loss in the college football playoffs. That's generally what Oklahoma, again, much like the Green Bay Packers, that's what they exist to do, is to not get to the title game, but do so in the most entertaining way of the playoffs.
Yeah. Elsewhere, given the results that we had this year, is it possible that that Ed Orgeron is going to do the Gene Chizik Express and go from national title to fired inside of 2 years?
it's certainly looking more and more likely by the day. I mean,
the thing that
he has that Chizik doesn't is the type of scandal that he has. Okay, because Chizik just had the one where he paid Cam Newton, you know, $200,000. But the scandal there wasn't so much him doing that; it was, well, wait a second, was Cam Newton the only reason that he won that? And turns out, no, it wasn't. It was Cam Newton and Gus Malzahn.
I was going to say Newton, Malzahn, and Nick Fairley, I believe. But, yeah, so LSU got worked by Kentucky on the road after losing a closer game to Auburn. But they now are 3-3. Their wins are over McNeese, Central Michigan, and Mississippi State. Here's their schedule the next 4 games. They host Florida this weekend, then they go to Ole Miss, then they go to Alabama, and then they host Arkansas.
Auburn ranked for any discernible reason?
No.
Is it just because, like, we assume Auburn is going to be... I mean, because they finally did it. I mean, I just after edging so long on firing Gus Malzahn, cannot even imagine the explosiveness of the cum shots from Auburn territory when they finally got to do it. They finally got to finish on all that firing Gus Malzahn edging. Was it worth it? I mean, I just see no reason that they should have been. You know, it's just all these preseason expectations. Can't say they're living up to them. Not to say that the 18th ranked team in the country should have necessarily competed with Georgia, because they're fairly good this year, but Auburn's not shown a whole lot to justify that ranking outside of competing with Penn State.
They're just kind of there. To finish the drill on LSU, though, in addition to that schedule I just mentioned, their star wide receiver, Kayshon Boutte, he of the 9 touchdowns, is also now out for the season. So
that's going to make things much more difficult.
An offense that's already pretty spotty, just lost their big-time playmaker. Again, usually assume they've got plenty of ammunition in terms of recruiting, but yeah, this is already an offense without Joe Brady coordinating it that has fallen off something of a ledge. And again, that schedule, not going to do them any favors. So,
and it's unfortunate that a man who is in every way the avatar of Louisiana is going to, I mean, in a way that, like, you've seen this happen before, where a man who is absolutely the avatar of the place that he's coaching, something happens to him. In this case, it was Brett Bielema getting brainworms and leaving for Arkansas.
Anyway, it'll be unfortunate when they fire him and hire, who's the Saban assistant du jour. Doesn't even matter. He won't be able to beat Nick Saban. Although, that streak came to an end this week, didn't it? As Texas A&M pulled off an upset over Alabama. And really kind of one of those big moments, because they came back. They were in front most of the game. Late, though, their quarterback, Zach Calzada, gets hurt. And then Alabama gets the ball, and they score to take the lead. And it's like, because of other injuries, A&M's backup is a walk-on. But then Calzada is able to come back in and play, and he throws a perfect ball. It was one of those big-time kind of moments. And so Alabama is definitely winning the national title this year, because they actually, I don't believe, have ever won the title in a year where they were undefeated in the regular season. I think that they might have done it once.
Yeah, no, they've definitely done it. I'm almost positive they did it in 2009, and they've done it once since then. They've won so many national titles that at some point they have to have done it a couple of times.
Maybe once, maybe twice, but...
But the thing is, Nick
Saban definitely wanted to lose a game, though.
Well, the problem is that Texas A&M is 1-2 in SEC play, so that means Alabama still can't get out of playing Georgia in the conference title game.
I see.
So Alabama would have to drop another game, to get out of that. The question is, who would they drop it to that wouldn't then tank them just enough? There's no amount they could be tanked enough. That being said, Texas A&M is going to want to do everything they can with this, because the last time they beat number one Alabama, they lost the next game 59-0.
Yeah. Elsewhere in the country, Boise State knocks BYU from the ranks of the undefeated. That ensures that Michigan State is now a top 10 team in the country. That makes no sense at all to me. But
well, you know who was once a top 10 team was Texas A&M. Who, you know, was at one point in the top 5, dropped all the way out to unranked, and then beat Alabama. So it's kind of a weird thing that happens, because it's like, well, maybe they should have been ranked, but certainly not that high. But maybe, I don't know. It's college football is weird this year, but again, it's not totally insane. Illinois and Kansas, still bad.
And speaking of still bad, winless UConn drops a game to UMass, which had not won a game in all about 2 years, I think, or maybe even longer. UConn's next game is against Yale. They've already lost to Holy Cross this season, they being UConn. So a winless
UConn
season.
Also finished 9-4 in 2007. So again, UConn, Illinois, Kansas, still bad. We're still not total chaos world.
And it's still not 2007 yet.
Nope.
So two FCS losses in a winless season is absolutely in play for UConn. Also, Wake Forest undefeated at 6-0 after escaping versus their eternal blood rival Syracuse, and I believe they are ranked behind Coastal Carolina, which I find endlessly hilarious.
Yeah.
They're like a Power 5 conference that's undefeated at this point in the season should be at least sniffing the top 10. And yet, Wake Forest is, what were they, like 17, 18 this week?
So I guess the question is, which of those two coaches could Illinois have hired last year? Both of them? Probably. Paying Dave Clawson like $1.5 million. But could have tripled his salary easily. But it's all right. It's only all right because we're not playing this week. So
you thought we wouldn't find a way to get a little Illinois discourse in here. So that brings us to this week in the Big Ten. As we mentioned in the opening, lots of teams on byes. Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, Nebraska, Maryland, Illinois. All taking a breather as we approach the midway point of the season.
So three very good teams. One very good team that's 3-4, one pumpkin, and one abortion.
Quite the panoply that it's just a beautiful panorama you're painting for us there.
If I ever do give up on Illinois, it could be the last thing that holds me back from being a decent college football blogger.
So, in the noon slate, I think the clear highlight in my mind of this portion of the schedule would be the brass platoon game, Michigan State going to Indiana.
My copper mug was not quite empty enough to be really resonant on that.
Honestly, not a bad facsimile of a spittoon, but it's a little troubling to me that it was so full-sounding. From the Michigan State perspective, you could pretty closely copy and paste the Rutgers preview in here. You're going to an offensively challenged opponent whose defense is going to be a pretty tough nut to crack. You are dealing with an opponent who's shorthanded a couple key spots. I know Michael Penix Jr. is not playing. What I meant to check is whether DJ Matthews is going to be able to play. So let me take a look at that and see if we know.
Here's the interesting thing for me about this game.
No, he's out for the season for like a few weeks now. How did I not know that? That sucks. Okay.
So, is there any game in the Big Ten where, coming into it, the emotion, the sentiment about it, is as different as before the season as this one? Can't possibly be. I don't think I'll see one for the rest of the year. I mean, maybe Ohio State, Michigan, because Michigan's also been a little bit, but Michigan was expected to be good, just not great.
You know, there were plenty of people who said, look, Michigan could be looking at a 6-6, 7-5 type of year. Not that that ever made sense, but that's what people
were
saying.
Michigan State going 4-8 made a lot more sense to me.
Yeah, for sure. Well, yes. I think for the most part, people were expecting 4 or 5 wins, hoping for 6.
So, on the other hand, Indiana, basically, these two teams have switched places as far as the expectations are concerned. Michigan State is doing what everybody thought Indiana might have the potential to do.
Yeah, sorry about it, Hoosiers, but look, you had your year in the sun back in the drawer.
With no fans.
It just fucking sucks, man. I can't wrap my head around how
just when you
sucks.
Thought we'd reach peak Indiana and then gotten over the hump of peak Indiana, what we thought was peak Indiana in a good way was actually peak Indiana in a bad way.
Yeah, they had their glorious moment in the sun. And again, I know they didn't beat Ohio State. I know they didn't go to Indy or win a Rose Bowl or whatever. But relative to recent Indiana football, it was a fantastic season. Nobody was there to see it. And now they have just wilted. So yeah, quarterback is out for this game. Top receiver's out for the season. Offense wasn't very good when those guys were healthy. Boy, it's... I don't take this game for granted. I think, you know, the lines came out and it was Michigan State by like 3.5 or 4.5 or something like that. Which,
if we're talking late stage Mark D'Antonio, what you're saying when you're talking about all these injuries is Indiana by 14, right?
Well, yeah. If we were. That being said, I don't know that a Jack Tuttle fueled passing game is gonna quite have the potency to take advantage of this soft coverage Michigan State likes to play. MSU has been very good shutting the run down, even with only 6 in the box on a lot of plays. They get their safeties involved in the run fits often, and it's worked pretty well. The only thing that gives me some pause here is kind of the same thing you did last week, which is a good defensive front can trouble this offense because the offensive line still isn't that great. So that being said, the skill players last week were too much for Rutgers to handle. I hope that's the case this week, but...
You don't like Tuttles, is what you're saying.
I don't like Tuttles. That concludes our Old Bass Platoon portion of the program, because...
I knocked that drink about as far as I could without knocking it over.
It was, from a physics standpoint, remarkable that you didn't spill. So, elsewhere in the noon slate, the $5 Bits of Broken Chair game sanctioned the game already. Nebraska, you absolute killjoys.
Nebraska, you know what? If they don't acknowledge... They better go ahead and acknowledge it this week, because if they don't and they lose... No, the entire internet's going to say that's why, and they're not going to be wrong.
And they're going to be right. Yeah, they're going to be right. So Minnesota coming off a bye here.
I'm not in a situation where I'm Nebraska. I'm not tempting fate like that anymore. You got three losses left before you're eliminated from bowl contention.
And you still got to play Iowa, so, you know, yeah, we know how that game's going to go.
Have to play Ohio State.
Yeah. So, anyway, we know how that's going to go because Iowa's going to win that game by three because they almost always do. Minnesota's coming off of the bye week. They did learn fairly recently. You'll recall Trey Potts had to be hospitalized with an unspecified ailment in the late stages of their last game. Turns out he is now out for the season with that. You never want to speculate, but, of course, the first thing that always comes to mind with that is maybe some kind of a heart issue. Whatever it is, you hope the best for the young man, and ideally he'll be able to get back to health and get back to playing, but they're going to be without him for the season. I told you, didn't I? Did you follow my advice? Or do you not have the pull to make that kind of recommendation mid-season for a pickup in your super elite skull and crossbones college keeper league? Did you do what I said and pick up Marquise Irving, or did you miss out on a huge opportunity?
No, I believe we did that. Although, you know what, as far as big opportunities we missed out on, we dropped Isaiah Bowser in the offseason, so...
Well...
No, that was only briefly a big opportunity.
Well, UCF scooped up, what, like a half dozen transfer running backs? There was no way to tell he was going to be the one who floated to the top there. But, in any case...
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time! The Roast of Tom Brady! A Netflix live event happening May 5th! Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's now down to your preseason running back three for Minnesota. They're coming off of a win and a bye week. It's perhaps, you know, they'll probably be okay with the offensive line the way they are, but this is a tough front to run against. The game is in Minnesota, so that's a little bit of a help there. I did pick Nebraska to win this game, though, because they've got to run out of ways to lose winnable games at some point, don't they? Don't they?
See, that's the thing. I think Nebraska should be able to win this game. I don't think that Minnesota, while fairly good on defense, is not one of the best defenses they've played. They should be able to move. I mean, honestly, here's what's crazy is Minnesota's defense profile statistically similar on a similar level to Northwestern's.
Which is crazy.
It's crazy to think about, but if Nebraska can make a lot of their basic, you know, not their basic, but like their fundamental plays work, foundational plays on offense work, then they can't be stopped, right? It's just a matter of if they can hit them all the time, which a lot of defense have been able to disrupt them from that.
It's that, and as it has been for so long with Nebraska, it's also avoiding the calamity mistakes.
Yep.
It's fine to have a false start or a holding penalty here and there. You can't fumble a ball. You can't throw interceptions. You can't give...
You really can't do that inside of 10 minutes to go in the game.
No, I mean, and especially against an opponent whose game script has reliably been shorten the game as much as possible, run the ball constantly.
You don't even know what team we're talking about. Could be anybody.
Well, right. But well, I'm talking about the one they're playing this week. But yeah. Yes, that's going to be a scripting... Right, against basically every opponent they play in the Big Ten West. Because that's what the division does, is we really just want 2 possessions each. We'll see who gets to 10 points, and then we get out of here and beat traffic.
Okay? I don't know. That's what I thought Illinois wanted until they decided they wanted to see Brandon Peters throw.
Well... They wanted to see him throw 7 times, and then they wanted to see Art Sitkowski throw.
The Care Bear Raid. Okay, so I don't want to be too trite, because also I really think that because Minnesota's offense has become pretty one-dimensional, I don't know if Chris Ottman-Bell is going to play, but either way, Tanner Morgan's regression has been alarming. I think Nebraska's defense has the tools to really put the screws to him. That being said, I just wonder how Nebraska is going to keep Minnesota in this game. I mean, this would be a soul-crushing loss.
It would, and it would be, frankly, the kind of loss that, in the abstract, you would look for the sign.
The tipping point.
That the tent is going to fold, yes.
The tipping point, yeah. I still think, again, they performed so strongly at Michigan. I like them to win this game, but, man. So, of course, our next game is going to be probably a Sickos Committee favorite.
Oh, yeah, the Big Ten Sickos game of the month.
I haven't seen Sickos Committee. Again, another shout-out to that Twitter follow. Rank this game, but Rutgers at Northwestern. Now, of course, I want to mention also that they had the Sickos Committee mid-season poll. The best thing is... They said themselves they don't really know how to define the criteria for Sickos rankings, but you know what I'm talking about.
No,
they know what I'm talking about.
It's the Supreme Court talking about pornography. You'll know it when you
yep,
see it.
I know it when I see it. Okay, so they had Nebraska as preseason number one. I would argue that for that reason, Illinois deserves to be perpetually in the top five, because everything bad that happens to Illinois has to then reflect on Nebraska. But this is a game between two teams that are likely to be bad things to happen to Illinois, but that also have very bad offenses.
Yeah.
We're
early in the week, and so it's not really clear if Rutgers is going to get their quarterback or their top two receivers or their starting left tackle back. Kind of some important pieces for a functional offense.
And yet, I've seen the latest SP Plus rankings. Northwestern's offense rates as worse than Illinois'.
Yeah.
Rutgers rates as... Not even one of the 4 worst in the conference, but pretty bad.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is even down 4 major starters, Rutgers offense still might be a little bit more of a threat than Northwestern, because I really liked what Sean Gleason does from a play-calling perspective. Understanding that he doesn't have a whole lot to work with here, I still think, look, Isaiah Pacheco, in my mind, is the best offensive player on either team in the game. And then after that, there's a decent argument that who's number 2? I mean, Hull? Like, this is a game dominated by the running backs, because neither passing attack can do anything. And both of these defenses, you know, to the extent Northwestern has any strength at all, I think they'd certainly you rather pass it against them than run it against them this year.
Yeah, this is...
This game could be dire. This is a... Rune-oo! Like, no wonder.
Well, you know... Rune! I think...
Or newer!
Obviously... Every game is important to every team, but gotta feel like this could be a statement for Rutgers.
Yeah, that we're gonna make a bowl game, and we're not gonna,
or at least we're sure gonna look like we're right on the verge
after that good first step last year.
Got the longest drought of the Big Ten.
That we ain't going back to being Chris Ash Rutgers and just getting whitewashed by the whole conference slate again. That we're winning this game and we're going to fight a couple more out and get to a bowl. Yeah, this is a big game for Rutgers, I have no doubt.
This puts them in position to have Illinois potentially be their bowl clincher.
I don't know who...
Yes, yes.
I don't know who they play between now and then, but I know they have other games they're winning. They haven't played Maryland yet, and I don't believe they played Indiana yet either. So they have some winnable games left on the schedule.
Northwestern... doesn't, this could be a big opportunity for them, because Rutgers, while substantially better than them, is still, if you look at a lot of statistical rankings, not just in Bill Connelly's stuff, but as far as just team type of yards per play on defense and offense, and just every way that anybody has to rank teams, by far the worst two in the Big Ten are Northwestern and then Illinois. And then Rutgers is the next one, but they're closer to the rest of the Big Ten than they are to Rutgers and Illinois, or to Northwestern
like,
and Illinois.
It's like the difference between Neptune and the rest of the planets versus Neptune and Pluto.
Yeah.
So, see, I didn't even do a science major in college, and I know all kinds of science-y references. I don't know the rest of Northwestern's schedule, but I know that next week they play Michigan. Kind of don't want to be going into that game coming off a beating at the hands of Rutgers. So, kind of an important game for both teams. In the way that if you throw a sandwich between a couple of starving dogs, it's very important to both of them to win that. Like, it's not going to save their lives necessarily, but it will prolong the end.
This game is two crabs in a bucket trying to prevent the other crab from escaping that bucket.
Oh no, you're staying right down here.
Oh no, we are both getting boiled to death and eaten. Fuck you, you're not getting out of this.
Oh boy. Okay, so
we alluded to this heavily. Yeah,
we did.
At the end of our preview.
Purdue at Iowa, the only game in the afternoon slot. Apparently Iowa only plays in the primo time slot at home now from now on. I don't know how that happened, but anyway, never complain again about the conference treating you poorly. So, yeah, we have mentioned that Jeff Brohm does have a little bit of a history of beating Iowa, whether or not the quality of the teams suggests that would be the outcome. So, that being said, this Purdue team is struggling a bit. They did come off of a bye week. We'll see what they do at quarterback. I mean, they made the change, but it's not like it went great. I don't know if you go back to Plummer after a game and a half.
Well, the crazy thing is, though, like, I think both quarterbacks, obviously no quarterback can be perfectly okay with this, but they both seem to respond when called on in the game to do what their thing is, right?
Yeah.
Certainly better than, say, Penn State's quarterback change went.
True.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, it's not something that you see a lot, because I do think that Jeff Brohm does have the trust of both quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And we're very sorry, Minnesota fans, that we keep saying good things about Jeff Brohm. We know how much that rankles you. But the interesting thing here for me versus years past is how improved Purdue's defense is and whether or not that's going to make a difference. Right?
Yeah, we'll see. This is going to be one of those games where I don't really think either team's going to be able to run the ball much, because I still think if you're Iowa, the recipe for success is to shut down the run game, which, by the way, has quietly been pretty bad this year. Presumably because most defenses are keying in on it, but I expected Tyler Goodson to be the best back in the Big Ten other than Mo Ibrahim. Certainly once Ibrahim went down, I was like, well, Goodson should be the best running back in the conference based on pedigree.
Might very well be. Doesn't seem to get quite as many opportunities as he should.
I mean, they give him, to the extent that they... No,
I'm saying he should get 40 carries a game.
I don't think they have enough offensive output to give him 40 carries.
Oh, you mean you don't think that they want to run that many plays?
I don't think that, well, whether they want to or not, they don't. So, yeah, he's led them in carries by a pretty wide margin. They mix in Ivory Kelly Martin a little bit. He's just a guy. I guess you'd take Goodson off the field occasionally, but he's, I don't know, I mean, he's got maybe one, two games that he's cracked 100 yards. He's not really having the kind of season I expected him to as their bell cow.
Well, I mean, their bell cow is their defense.
Sure. So, as I was kind of getting at, I don't know, Purdue has not been able to run the game all, has not been able to run the ball all year. I believe they have King Doru back for this game. That's the other thing, is I guess it's early enough in the week that we don't necessarily know how Purdue's injury situation is going to be looking. Bell came back in the last game. I think Doru should be fine, but it'll obviously help them if they get Payne Durham back. If they're at something approaching full strength, I kind of like Brohm's ability to scheme up some stuff that works against his defense, because, again, he's done it in the past.
The question is, man, can, you know, is Durham 100%, or will he have to play through some of it?
Some pain, that is.
Oh, see, I wasn't going all the way there. But you wouldn't think that Purdue would be able to pass on this Iowa defense, but if you look at the way Iowa's season unfolded last year, you would have also thought the same thing last year.
Yeah, well, it's not like Purdue, you know, threw for 540 points or something. I believe the score was 27-24 or something. But in a game like this, if you get into the 20s, you feel pretty good about your chances of winning. Because unless you give Iowa a defensive touchdown, this offense isn't going to get to 30 against a competent defense. So, all that being said, Iowa's definitely the better team. They are playing at home. On paper, Iowa's the obvious winner. But we've also agreed, I think, that it seems unlikely Iowa's running the table.
Xander Horvath was actually a pretty big contributor for Purdue in this game last year. So that's the other factor, is he's the kind of guy that maybe not as explosive as what else Purdue has back there, but he's the guy that you run in the middle to kind of control the clock a bit, and that's a really important thing to do against Iowa, maybe more so than get explosive plays. But
I can't say I remember his stat line from the Iowa game, but
21 for 130.
There were also a number of occasions where he demonstrated himself to be a better receiver than you would expect of kind of a bigger between the tackles guy. So he's a big missing piece from this offense that beat Iowa last year, that's true. But look, if you want to be a good defense, starting with David Bell and a couple really good compliments. You know, we haven't mentioned Milton Wright yet, another guy who has contributed on and off, maybe not been as consistent as Purdue would like him to be, but him plus Durham, if he can play, plus Bell, I like their chances. I mean, it's probably better than a puncher's chance, probably something like, I don't know, 65-35, Iowa wins this game, something like that. Not score.
Not you mean, no, you mean, no, no, no. 6-3. 6.5 to 3.5.
Yeah, that would be about the average outcome there. Finally, in the Big Ten slate, a non-conference game, and a really dumb decision by Wisconsin to host Army in the middle of the year with no week before to prep and no bye week afterwards. I'm all for supporting the troops, but do not agree to play a service academy under any circumstances, certainly not without a bye week afterwards, so your defensive lineman's knees can recover.
Honestly, it barely even matters how good they are, but they are 3-1. They lost to, while playing a small MAC slate, they beat Miami of Ohio but lost to Ball State. They did score 38 on Western Kentucky. Not sure what that means, but again, it's academic. We're talking about Wisconsin as a team that could maybe still, even at this unfortunate stage, as they're 2-3 for them, has... What are you doing over there, Millie? You see how her head is? She's just contorted herself into this corner trying to not hear about Iowa football.
So boring!
So, point is, Wisconsin just can't really afford to get cut blocked to death at this point in a season where they do still have, in my opinion, what it takes to throw a wrench in Iowa's gears, but Iowa's going to need a couple of wrenches thrown in their gears to not win this division.
Yeah,
they're going to need some help, Wisconsin is. And they're not helping themselves out at all by scheduling this game.
No, because you will probably win, almost certainly win, even with...
When they scheduled this game, I get it was a long time ago, but when they scheduled this game, they should have known better. Like, it's not... They couldn't have scheduled this game in, like, the 90s, when you might not have known better about the cut blocking.
Yeah, but, like, the book is out. If you're going to play a service academy, it's got to be early. And you gotta have a bye afterwards. Your defense will need it. They go from
Air Force is the worst, but
yeah,
Army's closer to them than they are to Navy.
Yeah, well, and Wisconsin goes from this game to a trip to Purdue. I guess you could say that's not exactly a bruising run game, so maybe it's not too much of an issue. But boy, yeah, and I mean, other than that, like, I don't know what there is to talk about from.
Well, it's not a shin-bruising run game, because nobody else has a shin-bruising run game.
Right, unless they play Navy or Air Force. So, anyway, I feel pretty good about Wisconsin's odds to win that game.
We should hire Jeff Munkin.
Honestly, it wouldn't be the worst idea. So now let's take a quick spin around at other games that you might keep an eye on.
Guess who's quietly undefeated?
It's Oklahoma State.
Oklahoma State Cowboys. Their offense has not looked that... Yeah, their offense has kind of been bad.
Relying on defense, and they go to Texas this week, a week after the Longhorns just had their guts ripped out by Oklahoma in a Red River that they thought they were going to win.
Halloween colors 2 weeks before Halloween. Spooky, scary skeletons and shivers down your spine.
Elsewhere, you have Central Florida going to Cincinnati. Preseason, this might have been an interesting game. Considerably less of a threat to Cincinnati's bid for the playoff in that UCF quarterback Dylan Gabriel is out, I believe, for the season. So not quite the threat that they would usually be.
Sucks.
Although, it does.
Yeah, they've got, I mean, there was that drive against Louisville where they threw a game-ending pick six while losing all of their starting skill players.
The SEC ranked matchup of the week that shouldn't be would be Auburn at Arkansas. As we mentioned before, Auburn's just ranked for no reason at this point. Sooner or later, they're going to be like 4-7, and maybe at that point they'll drop out of the top 25. Furthering our non-conference sickos pick of the week, you could try to find a grainy 8-bit feed of Yale at UConn. Mentioned again, UConn's going for winless, trying to dethrone their own team from a couple years ago as the worst FBS team of all time.
This will publish either Thursday or Friday, by which point Appalachian State will have already played the Ragin' Cajuns on Tuesday.
Yeah, so you should go back in time and watch that game if you didn't already. Actually, interesting SEC game from my perspective would be Florida at LSU, because depending on the margin, if Florida wins, that could be a game that just gets Orgeron fired mid-season. Once again, less than 2 years after a national championship. LSU's got the temperament to do that.
Dino Babers is in a flat spin at Syracuse. Just cannot find any way to get any lift to the wing surfaces here, to any of the control surfaces. Clemson comes into town, seemingly doing a bit of free-falling on their own. But also, they're Clemson and have more blue chip talent than virtually every team in the country, except for, you know, of course, a select few. The question is, can Dino Babers do one of those things where he, way down at the edge of the stage, kind of bounces off of him back on to...
I saw that game, and I thought about adding it here, but it's not interesting to me because my team didn't pass on hiring Dino Babers. So mediocre Syracuse is of no interest to me. Neither is Clemson. But anyway,
I was always interested in how flailing coaches do. You know, flailing coaches is kind of my oeuvre as an Illinois fan whose coach is pretty much always flailing in a desperate but futile bid to survive his tenure.
If you want to watch a problematic bowl, we've got BYU at Baylor.
Oof.
Maybe don't watch that one.
Kentucky plays at Georgia, which will be really interesting to see how an offense largely powered by a guy that got beat out for Big Ten starting job and a guy that left the Big Ten for family reasons can go up against the number one Georgia, who, look, on one hand, we certainly don't like that Georgia's number one, but on the other hand, it's a thing where, of course, we hate other people from outside of here being number one, but we also hate all the other teams in our conference so much that perhaps it's a good thing that Georgia is the only thing keeping us from number one Iowa.
I do hate that Iowa, with probably the best win in the country to this point this year, is not number one. But I would also hate if they were number one, because as we've seen, I remember when Michigan State first had their breakthrough of success, everyone was like, oh, you Michigan State fans are the worst. No, I think actually, you mentioned the crab in the pot analogy earlier. Basically, if any fan base other than Ohio State is having any success at all, apparently we don't know how to handle it. I'll throw some air quotes around that, because you know what? If your team is good and you're getting some transitory joy out of it, you should be an intolerable asshole for a little while. With the understanding that when you fall back to Earth, you are going to be dumped upon by the other crabs here in the pod.
Now, what I'm wondering is, did podcasts as a concept exist the last time Illinois was good at football? Because I'll tell you this, and I've guaranteed you this for a long time. Yep. Illinois is ever good at football again, I promise I will set new records for being insufferable.
Remember,
I will in one season completely wipe out any sympathy you have for me. I promise.
You got pretty close with basketball, and you didn't even win anything.
your source for Big Ten Talk. It's Off Tackle Empire.